is The Guardian. I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story. An Australian billionaire, backed by a multinational company, have made a bid to buy Australia's dirtiest energy company, AGL. If successful, they plan to speed up the closure of AGL's coal plants, shift to renewables, and turn a profit. But Prime Minister Scott Morrison and executives at AGL say that this plan will not work, and that Australia is not prepared for such a rapid end to coal. Today, the power struggle over the future of Australia's energy. It's Thursday, the 24th of February. So, Adam, a lot of people would have heard of AGL. They might have got an energy bill from AGL in the past. But what do we need to know about what's happening right now with AGL?
There's been an extraordinary bid, possibly the most extraordinary bid in the history of the Australian electricity market.
Adam Morton is Guardian Australia's climate and environment editor.
To buy AGL, which is both the biggest energy company in the country and the biggest emitter of greenhouse gas. It's an $8 billion bid, give or take. That would, if successful, lead to the takeover of all of AGL's electricity generation assets. That's coal, gas, and renewable energy. And its retail business, it has 4.5 million customers across the country. Now, AGL had been planning what's known as a demerger, effectively splitting itself in two by the end of this financial year. It would create a new entity called Accel Energy, which basically would be the home for AGL's coal-fired plants and some other bits and pieces. And then most of the remainder of the company would continue as AGL. So it's looking to spin off its coal power plants into a different company.
Why would they do that, demerge?
Basically a reflection of the fact that coal doesn't make money anymore, is increasingly uneconomic, and isn't expected to have a long-term future, and is a challenge for a company to manage. But now this bid has been made to buy the entire company outright.
Right, so Australia's biggest energy company was on the path to split up, but then an $8 billion bid is put on the table to buy the entire company. How did this all come about?
It really crept up out of nowhere on people, I think, though perhaps we should have seen the signs that it was coming. The bid was launched on Saturday and it came to light on Sunday. And when I heard, I was having a fairly lazy Sunday afternoon, and that changed fairly dramatically because this was really big news. Things like this just don't happen all the time.
Right. So who's behind this $8 billion bid to buy AGL?
It's being led by, or at least the face publicly of it, is Mike Cannon-Brookes, who is one of Australia's richest people, a multi-billionaire.
Over a decade ago, I started a business with my mate straight out of uni. Now, having no prior business experience and not really any grand plan, in fact, our goals when we started were not to have to get a real job and to not have to wear a suit to work every day. Check and check.
The co-creator of the software company Atlassian.
Today, we have thousands of amazing employees and millions of people use our software around the planet. And technically even outside the planet, if you count those that are currently on their way to Mars.
And has made a name in recent years as a renewable energy investor, a green solution investor, and a climate change advocate.
Mike Cannon-Brookes, welcome to the show.
Mike Cannon-Brookes, welcome again to breakfast.
Thanks for having me back.
Mike Cannon-Brookes is the chief executive of Atlassian and a principal of Grok Ventures. Mike, so
he's doing this with Brookfield, which is a massive Canadian asset management firm. It's actually the major partner in the bid, about 80% of it, with assets under management already across the globe worth nearly $700 billion US. Now, the central thing to know about the offer is that they propose to get AGL out of coal-fired power much sooner than the company currently plans. They want to close down AGL's big coal power plants, Bayswater in New South Wales and Loy Yang A in Victoria, by 2030, and say they have up to $20 billion that they're willing to spend on top of the cost of buying the company to build other infrastructure such as renewables in a hurry.
So replacing AGL's coal with renewable energy, essentially. That sounds like a really big and complex task. Why do they want to do this? What is their motivation?
Well, as always with anything on this scale, there's multiple motivations. A key one is clearly the desire to cut emissions really rapidly and the belief that there is economic value in taking those steps and moving much more rapidly than AGL currently proposes.
Right. I want to dig into that first point that you make. What is their plan to reduce emissions and what could be achieved under that plan?
Well, the coal plants would shut by 2030, which would bring that forward from 2033 and 2045, and then to make the company net zero emissions by 2035. One way to think about it is, and again, this is Cannon Brooks's description, it would wipe out about 40 million tonnes of carbon dioxide a year, and that's about, or a bit more than, 8% of Australia's annual emissions footprint.
And turn one of our biggest carbon-emitting companies into a net zero company in the next decade or so.
Right, in 13 years. Cannon Brooks described it as, when you look at the amount of emissions that would be cut,
that would make it one of the biggest decarbonisation projects on Earth.
And that doesn't seem unreasonable.
For those listening who aren't aware, AGL is the single largest emitter in the country, but it represents over 8% of Australia's emissions. It's more than all domestic and international aviation. And if it's a country, it's bigger than Sweden or Ireland or New Zealand.
You said that's one of the motivations, but the other is an economic motivation. Tell me about that. How does this make business sense for them?
Well, yeah, Cannon Brooks stresses it's not a philanthropic investment. They believe that there is money in renewable energy and the profitable energy generation assets are solar and wind and the supporting infrastructure that we'll need around that. And obviously also there's a huge retail business here that they would see would be, I think, commercially attractive to them.
Right, 4.5 million customers isn't nothing.
There is clearly something to work with there.
So how did AGL respond to this $8 billion offer?
The AGL board met on Sunday and were very quick to reject the offer. They issued a statement to the Australian Stock Exchange before it opened on Monday morning, in which they basically said it wasn't enough to recognise the value in the company and wasn't in the best interests of shareholders. AGL's leadership later came out and made even stronger comments, calling the offer ridiculously low and said that a premium of at least 30% on its share price would usually be needed to accept this sort of takeover deal. And that they said they want guarantees about other things, including job security for staff, support for communities affected by coal plant closures. And they also attacked this idea that coal plant closure could be accelerated so that the company was completely out of coal by 2030. They said it was unrealistic, irresponsibly fast, and would ultimately cost customers.
I mean, that sounds pretty clear and also a very quick rebuttal of that offer. Does that mean that it's all over?
No, and certainly not according to Cannon Brooks or Brookfield, who say they are going to continue to work with the board and the company and also work directly with shareholders to persuade them that this is a deal in their interest.
What about that claim from AGL that this first offer of $8 billion kind of undervalues the company overall?
Well, it's rejected by the consortium that have put in the bid. They make the case that this is a good deal for shareholders, that the share price has fallen dramatically, and that if the demerger, the split that AGL proposes, goes ahead, that the two resulting businesses, both the coal-focused ASL Energy and the rest that continues as AGL, there's reason to think, based on analysis for the consortium, that both will have their value fall after that. Now, the company obviously disputes that, but that's the consortium's position. This is a good offer, and we have no sense yet whether they would intend to make a better offer.
I mean, that kind of sounds like messaging to the shareholders from Mike Cannon Brooks and others. Hey, you can hold on, but the shares are going to drop in value if this demerger happens.
Exactly. And I mean, Cannon Brooks is explicit about this. When I interviewed him on Monday, I asked him, you know, what role does he have to play here now? And the first thing he said was trying to convince shareholders that this was a deal in their interest.
You have described this bid as pretty historic. I mean, what's your take on this? Is it likely that this will go ahead?
there is certain a view within people who watch the energy market closely that there is a reasonable likelihood to think that it could yet go through in some form, or that we could see other potential offers flowing now that this whole idea is in play. I mean, really, we're in such uncharted waters here. I spoke to Brookfield's Asia Pacific regional head, Stuart Upson, and he stressed that they've never done anything like this before, and he's not heard of anyone doing something like this before internationally, buying a business like AGL that, you know, largely is a thermal power, coal power business, and brings forward what is currently a long-term plan to retire coal and tries to do it much quicker and replace it. This is new, according to him. We're in a weird time with the future of coal-fired power in Australia, and I think that it's very early days in this whole discussion just yet.
Mm. You mentioned we're in a weird time for coal-fired power. I mean, tell me about that. What's the broader picture for a business like AGL that has these large coal assets right now?
The reality is that we've seen a real surge in renewable energy coming into the electricity grid in the last handful of years. Last year, it provided more than 30% of electricity in the national market. 3 years ago, it was about 20%. You know, this is a significant jump. That is putting real pressure on coal-fired power plants, the owners of coal-fired power plants that wasn't there just a couple of years ago. These are, in many cases, old creaking plants that are at or rapidly approaching what was initially supposed to be the end of their natural lives. We're seeing coal plants break down, and now we have so much renewable energy in the middle of the day, and it's coming in very cheap, that sometimes in the middle of the day, it's providing the equivalent of in the entire grid's electricity needs.
Right. We have seen some high-profile announcements that some coal plants will close down earlier than expected. Can you talk me through that? What's the most significant announcements in this area?
There's been a few of them. AGL, earlier this month, brought forward its proposed closure dates for its two remaining plants, Bayswater and Loy Yang A, to 2033 and 2045, respectively. It's already brought forward the closure of its Liddell plant, also in New South Wales, to next year. So that'll be shutting from April. Origin Energy, one of the other big players in the electricity market, just last week announced that the country's biggest coal-fired power plant, Eraring, on the shore of Lake Macquarie in New South Wales, could shut 7 years earlier than scheduled in 2025 rather than 2032. And there's been others. The end result is we're likely to see a number of plants shut this decade that not that long ago were meant to run well into the 2030s or even 2040s.
Next, Australia's lack of planning for a coal-free future and what all this could mean for your energy bills. So we know that the Morrison government is fairly pro-coal. How have they responded to this trend, businesses opting to shut down their coal plants earlier than scheduled?
Their general position is they don't want this to happen. Whenever we see one of these announcements, Angus Taylor, the Energy and Emissions Reduction Minister, usually says that he is concerned that the closure of coal plants will lead to a spike in electricity prices and could impact reliability of the energy grid. They're obviously also mindful of the fact that there are jobs in coal-fired power. The government really resists this idea that this is going to potentially come in a rush and stresses that it wants to see these plants run for as long as possible.
With that in mind, I imagine the AGL bid was concerning for them. What did they have to say?
The Prime Minister was asked about this on Monday at a press conference, and he really went straight to the risks.
But let me be really clear about something. We need to ensure that our coal-fired generation of electricity runs to its life. Because if it doesn't, electricity prices go up.
Some would, I think, call it a form of a scare campaign.
And so our government is very committed to ensure we sweat those assets for their life to ensure that businesses can get access to the electricity and energy that they need at affordable prices to keep people in jobs. And what's essential is that we get the balance right with our energy policy.
I just want to pause there and do a bit of a fact check on this oft-repeated claim that if we shut down coal too quickly, power bills will skyrocket. What do you make of that claim, Adam?
I think if it's made in the right context, it's not an unreasonable thing to say. There is a possibility that power bills can go up here if it's not handled well. Mm. The transition to a zero emissions grid or a near zero emissions grid is not straightforward, and nobody should pretend that it is. If you take out a big generator and you have less competition in the market, then it stands to reason that prices could go up. We should stress here that the Australian Energy Market Operator, known as AEMO, has given us really strong indication that this transformation is manageable. If the transition is handled well and there's enough replacement generation and backup infrastructure in the grid, that it can be avoided or mitigated, or as Cannon Brooks stresses, that prices can actually come down because renewable energy is cheap.
So you don't think this is going to have an impact on retail prices if you take over AGL?
I do think it's going to have an impact on retail prices. I think we're going to bring retail prices down, right? We have the lowest power prices in Australia we've had in 8 years because of the impact of renewables on our grid. The faster we can bring online sensibly more renewables, the lower power prices will go. We should have the lowest power prices in the OECD, in the Western world, in Australia. We have the sun, the wind, the financial assets to make that happen. We're accelerating the transition that is already happening apace. So yes, it will affect the retail price of power in a positive way.
So the government knows this is going to happen, despite the resistance every time somebody announces something to accelerate it. And business knows it's going to happen and increasingly wants answers for how quickly it will happen, what assurances there'll be in place to make sure the transition, which we all agree is underway, can happen as smoothly as possible.
So, Adam, we are coming up close to an election. You and I covered Labor's broader climate policy at the end of last year on the podcast and compared it with the coalition's plan. But I'm wondering if we can narrow in on coal. I mean, what is the future of coal under a Labor government versus a coalition government?
Well, if we're talking about coal-fired power in Australia, it's rapidly on its way out, no matter who's in power or what policy's in place, to be honest. We should look at projections from federal officials in the government's department that came out last year that said by 2030, under the current path, without a national policy to guide coal's exit or hasten coal's exit, we'll be getting nearly 70% of our power from renewable energy.
Right. So how are our two possible future governments planning for this eventuality?
Well, the coalition's plan is to acknowledge it's happening, but resist the pace of it and not introduce policy to accelerate it. It's just happening naturally.
Which seems kind of remarkable. It's one of the biggest challenges that governments are facing around the world, this transition, to not have significant policy around this.
Right. Well, I mean, we shouldn't underestimate that there is a significant part of the community, including a support base for the coalition, who, rightly or wrongly, is very worried about this shift away from coal or is in denial that it's happening. Mm. I don't know that it's as widely understood as it should be, just how rapidly this is moving now. The coalition, I guess we could politely say they're not really in the game of emphasising how quickly this change is going to happen or educating people about that.
Right. So what about Labor's plan?
Labor has a slightly incongruous position, which is they say that their policies will do nothing to accelerate the closure of coal plants beyond what would happen anyway. But they do have a policy to create a fund off budget worth $20 billion to accelerate the creation of all the transmission links that are needed to connect renewable energy zones that are being built to the grid. The coalition are putting some money into this too, it should be said. Labor's saying they'll do it more rapidly. And they had some modelling as part of their policy that says we'll be at 82% renewable energy by 2030 under Labor. How that can happen without there being any coal plants closing down more rapidly is not entirely clear, unless they're all just going to sit there idle and hardly ever run, which is a completely uneconomic idea. But implicitly, Labor's plan would lead to less coal generation more rapidly than the coalition.
Right, but neither party is committing to closing down coal plants necessarily. I mean, how feasible is that not to have a plan for that at all?
I guess it's difficult political terrain. Neither party, particularly Labor, don't want to be accused of shutting coal plants and putting people out of work in marginal electorates. We have to now see policy to help these communities, but it's pretty thin on the ground at the moment. Because as soon as you have one, you're acknowledging that this change is going to happen. We should add on the transition that states are doing some interesting things. The New South Wales government made an announcement after Origin's announcement about Eraring's earlier closure that it would spend $250 million over 5 years to boost manufacturing of renewable energy components. It's not going to be the whole job, but we are starting to see things coming on, at least at a state level, and there's going to have to be more that comes in behind it.
Right, so some planning on the state level for these communities, but a bit of a worrying gap when it comes to planning for this future from the federal government. On the flip side, is what we're seeing with this AGL bid a fairly positive sign that with or without government support, this transition is not only feasible, but could be profitable? I mean, that they're planning to put in $28 billion into this whole plan. You wouldn't do that if you didn't think it made economic sense for you and was possible, right?
Right. It's a huge vote of confidence in what the future grid could be, will be, and its viability. I don't think it should be interpreted any other way. There are obviously some commentators who doubt Cannon Brooks and Brookfield's claims about what can be done, how quickly it can be done, the viability of it. But these people aren't fools. They clearly are not doing this as a lark, and they're very confident that this can be a really strong success for them.
I mean, it is such a big problem. We have these coal plants all around the world that are aging. Something needs to be done with them. We have this big transition underway. Are you hoping that we'll see more billionaires stepping forward to try and provide some solutions here?
Oh, look, I think we should be cautious about the billionaire saviour model for the future. Not that I'm wanting to dismiss, you know, what Cannon Brooks is proposing, but I do think that seeing big investment money, where they will be making their profits in the future, is in clean solutions. Mm. So we're going to see more and more money thrown at these things. I do think it'll accelerate. Is it going to be fast enough? I guess we'll see.
That was Adam Morton, Guardian Australia's climate and environment editor. You can read his reporting this week on AGL at theguardian.com, including the piece, AGL open to higher takeover bid, but says Cannon Brooks' plan to close coal by 2030 is unrealistic. It goes into some of the latest comments by all sides of this deal and also speaks to the head of Brookfield about the historic nature of this bid. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria, Najna Sambul and Alison Chan. Sound design and mixing by Daniel Simo. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Muttignoni, Gabrielle Jackson and me, Laura Murphy-Oates. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. It does help other people find the show. Okay, catch you tomorrow.